listeners, Sai Ram. We now bring you Vahini Satsang. Today's episode was first aired on the 15th of December 2016 as part of Thursday Live programs on Asia Stream of Radio Sai. This program is hosted by Team Radio Sai's Bishu.
Sairam, dear listeners, and welcome to the first episode of this new series, Vahini Satsang. And joining me in this program is Brother Sai Prakash, who is familiar to the regular listeners as the co-host of our popular series, Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam. Welcome, Sai Prakash, and thank you so much for being there for Vahini Satsang.
Oh, thank you for having me in this wonderful venture. Let's see how it goes. I'm not sure.
Yeah, and before we proceed, I just want to let you know, dear listeners, that Brother Sai Prakash had to take a break from Shravanam Mananam Nididhyasanam because Bhagwan gave him a very beautiful opportunity to undergo training in video productions and multimedia information dissemination strategies at the Discovery Channel in New Delhi for 6 months. So he's now back, wiser in the ways of how the media works, and also, he's someone who has been very passionate about Vahini, so had also done a lot of video work, at least started off a video project based on Vahini. So it is really something that a lot of people in the studio resonate with because it is Bhagwan's own writings. And today is December 15, 2016, and we are really grateful to Bhagwan that we are able to begin this series today as we prepare to embark on a new year, just 15 days from now.
Right, I mean, just thinking of what we are going to enter into, this is 2016, and if we are going to start with the first Vahini that Swami has written, that was just in 1958.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, in fact, that reminds me of that first discourse, in Satya Sai Speaks, Volume 1.
Okay.
That's the discourse that Swami delivered in 1953. And in that, Swami says, all these days, I have been generally giving individual advice.
Okay.
And I'm giving answers to only particular people's questions. So it was like packets available in shops. But Swami said, from now, it is no more going to be individual advice. This speech, even though it is new to you, Swami said it is not new to me, because even though it may be new to you, for me it is nothing new. I have given advice to large gatherings before, though not in this appearance.
Oh, wow.
And then Swami says, whenever Nirakara becomes Sakara, it has to fulfill the mission, and it does so in various ways. But the one purpose, the re-education of man, persists, whatever be the yuga. And then, of course, Swami goes on to reveal the plan of the Satya Sai Avatar. It's really very prophetic and very, very meaningful. Bhagwan is actually laying down the schema for his life. You know, the first time, actually, perhaps Bhagwan reveals that the first 16 years of this life have been, as I've often also told you, the period where Balalila or the divine sport will be predominated. Mm-hmm. The next 16 years will be spent mostly in Mahimas, which will be manifestations, miracles, in order to give you joy, santosha, to this generation.
Mm-hmm.
And Swami says this joy and contentment are short-lived sensations. You have to catch that what is permanent, and permanent is ananda. And then Swami says, after the 32nd year, you will see me active more and more in the talk of upadesha, in the task of upadesha.
Mm.
And that is when I will be teaching erring humanity and directing the world along the path of Satya, Dharma, Shanti and Prema.
Wow.
When you think about it, Bhagwan was 27 in 1953. Okay, but Bhagwan is making it known that after 32 years of his advent, he will move on to a different gear in terms of reforming the mind of man. And if you see, very significantly, on this 32nd year, that is in 1958, Bhagwan launches the Sanatana Sarathi.
Yes.
on the holy occasion of Shivratri.
Of Shivratri, that's true. In fact, when you're mentioning Sanatan Sarthi, the 50th year of completion,
yes,
that is 2007, 2007. So, because 1958,
correct.
Then 2007, they had the 50th year. There was a very beautiful video that was made.
Correct, I remember.
And, you know, there were just 2-3 photographs of how Swami actually went to the printing press. And the first printing press that Swami actually went to and blessed the printing press to actually print the Sanatan Sarthi. The whole documentary was very beautiful, but one sentence which caught, you know, which still inspires me, the intention or the approach which Swami had for Sanatan Sarthi, what was Sanatan Sarthi in his point of view? He said, this is the prasadam which the people should be eagerly waiting for at their doorsteps.
Yes.
Every month. And it should come and satiate their hunger for spirituality.
Yes.
I mean, that is so beautiful, because this is a magazine. Which other magazine has been elevated to the level of prasadam? And he says, this is prasadam, and people, yes, should be waiting at the doorsteps, eagerly waiting, yes, to receive this.
Yes. And I remember in the initial months, actually Sanatan Sarthi was free.
Okay.
It was free. Only later on, you know, because to cover some certain administrative costs, Swami said you charge very minimal.
Absolutely minimal, yeah.
Absolutely minimal. Mm-hmm. I think that was the whole idea. Bhagwan's prasad, all Bhagwan's gifts come to us with his graciousness, and they come free, and they come in a very beautiful way.
Yeah, I mean, the whole idea that if we are venturing into Vahinis today, these are all articles written by Swami.
Yes.
All the Vahinis are basically articles written by Swami for Sanatan Sarthi.
Yes.
And as I heard, I think Swami had written for 26 years.
Correct.
Without a break.
From 1958 till 1984.
Oh my God. And every month consistently. There is a very beautiful photograph of, you know, Swami sitting on a small parapet wall in Vrindavan bungalow, the old bungalow before Trai Vrindavan came up. I believe some of the students who were there with studying in Swami's college at that time, they were mentioning that he would just take this notebook and he would sit anywhere, and he would just sit and write, and then that would be the article.
Yes. I remember when we did a story on Professor Kasturi.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, Kasturi had this sort of difficult job as the editor of the Sanatan Sarthi to request Swami for articles, you know.
Right.
So how do you say, Swami, it's already time, you know, and we have our schedules, we have to print, we have to, the magazine has to leave on this day, it has to reach homes on this day.
And you're speaking to the Lord of Time, Kala Kala Inama, who is beyond time.
So it was really quite a challenging task for Kasturi, sir, to somehow how to convey, Swami, please, I need your article. And in those days, Swami used to travel a lot.
Right, right.
Yeah. And on one occasion, Gandikota Subbarao sir was there, you know, and so that day the time was really running out, and you know, there were a lot of people who used to think how all this is coming, you know, does Swami refer to any book,
right?
Perhaps there are some books on some Upanishads in Swami's room, but as you said, Swami would just write it. But this was one rare occasion when there was very little time, and Gandikoti Subbarao sir was there, where Swami just waved his hand and produced
a written article.
Yeah, a written article.
Wow.
and that was apparently an elaborate commentary on the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad.
My goodness.
So that is the legacy. I mean, that is what is Vahinis. When you're talking about Vahinis, they have flowed from the Lord directly.
It's so amazing, because, you know, you mentioned that I had this opportunity to go to Discovery. And a part of it was self-discovery, of course. And I learned a lot. I learned a lot technically from the office and from my colleagues, from my friends, from the whole environment outside, and what are their insecurities, what are their positive points. Everybody has positive, and everybody has a tender heart. I mean, there's absolutely no going back on that, because everybody is seeking for love.
Yes.
And everybody wants happiness. So the basic human need is always the same. We are so fortunate that we have had this opportunity to, you know, be with Swami and get those wishes fulfilled. So when I was in Delhi for the 6 months, I made it a point to read the Vahinis.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I said, if at all we are going to say that we are running a media center in the name of Sri Satya Sai, we better know what Sri Satya Sai stands for.
Yes.
We better know what his message is.
Yes.
Of course, we can't remember everything that he said, but we have a general sense of what it is. But we should make the effort of reading. And I really, dedicated time, and I've read at least 5-6 Vahinis.
Wow.
I've read Leela Kaivalya Vahini,
oh,
Satya Sai Vahini, Prema Vahini, Vidya Vahini, Jnana Vahini, then Prashnotar Vahini. Dhyana Vahini is so beautiful. Wow. I mean, all Vahinis are beautiful.
Yes.
So, I have really read all these Vahinis, and what really strikes me is that great compassion with which he has written all this.
Yes.
The great compassion for him to, actually for him to come down on earth itself is his act of compassion. Yes. It's an act of ultimate compassion. But then having come down, he just didn't sit in one room and say, that's it, I'm God, all of you come and worship me. No, he did so much. He just, every second of his life, he was just dedicating it to the devotees.
Wow. Amazing. and as you mentioned, for 26 years, non-stop, 1958 till 1984. Hmm. And if you see, the timing of each Vahini also was very interesting. The Vidya Vahini was written in 1981.
Okay.
The time when Bhagwan unfurled the universities.
Oh, wonderful.
And the last Vahini is the Leela Kaivalya Vahini, which is a delight. it ends on that on that note. And of course,
I think Leela Kaivalya Vahini is a very small one, right?
Very small one.
Very small one, yeah. So I said I can count one quick one if I read that.
But it's really very significant, and perhaps very, very symbolic that the first Vahini is Prema Vahini.
Correct. And, you know, the beauty is Prema Vahini is actually, all the Vahinis are Prema Vahini.
Yes.
Because that essence of love, the whole theme of love, percolates into every sentence that he has written.
Yes.
In all the Vahinis. It's really amazing.
So, I think, given that Bhagwan started with Prema Vahini, and this satsang, I think definitely we should start with Prema Vahini.
Yes.
So, why don't we listen to the first few lines.
Okay.
From the first chapter of Prema Vahini. We have Brother Sunil who has read out.
Okay, in paragraphs.
In paragraphs.
Okay.
So we'll just take the first few lines and then we'll try to understand whatever Bhagwan is trying to convey to us.
Out of all bygone yugas, in this Kali age, there are ample easy ways to obtain viveka or discrimination, which indeed is glowing effulgently as much as one desires. To pursue vidya or education, there are plenty of educational institutions. To earn wealth, there are enough avenues, including by working hard. In spite of all these, if one has no peace and happiness, and faces so many troubles, what is the reason? It's only because of the deficiency in one's conduct. There is no other reason.
So let's stop there.
That is the first paragraph. The first paragraph of the first chapter of the first Vahini.
Yes.
Amazing.
Where Bhagwan is stating the situation today.
Right.
And asking us why the world is what it is today.
In fact, it's so amazing. that the situation remains the same.
Yeah. Whether it is 1958
or it 2016. The situation remains the same. And sometimes you wonder, the avatar has come and written and then left. Yeah. And what is the impact?
Yeah.
So, you know, this is a thought I really had. And in a way, you know, the 6 months I was contemplating on what it is all about. Nothing is going to happen if you are not involved. See, yes. The conclusion is, forget telling others. Forget, you know, preaching. Forget telling I have read these many Vahinis. It doesn't matter. What matters is what you follow. And if you follow his message, you just make earnest effort in trying to follow his teachings, then you need not speak at all.
Yeah.
You need not speak. Because the moment you start following his message, people are going to see on their own. And I have experienced this. I've actually experienced this. People come on their own and ask me, how come you're so calm all the time? How come you're so balanced? How come you're so pleasing to everybody? So, you know, you don't need to go and put a board on your back and say, I am from Satya Sai Ashram. I am a Sai Baba devotee. No. Others should come and ask you. And what Swami is talking about in the first paragraph is, yes, compared to all other yugas, he says, in Kali Yuga, there are so many avenues to get Viveka.
Yes.
He says, there are so many avenues to get Viveka.
The number of disciplines we have today,
mm-hmm.
specialization, super specialization, super specialization. I mean, right. There is no end to how much knowledge you can get.
Exactly. But, you know, Viveka is something slightly different from knowledge.
Yes. This is discrimination.
Viveka is discrimination. And so he says, there are a lot of educational institutions and there are a lot of avenues to work and earn money. But Viveka,
yes.
How many of them are able to acquire that Viveka, that knowledge? See, Viveka is discrimination knowledge. Swami used to say there are many types of knowledge.
Correct, yeah.
Bookish knowledge, common sense knowledge, practical knowledge, discriminative knowledge, which...
Yes. Which will help one to... Viveka is something which will help one to use the knowledge in... To discriminate, to use the knowledge that you have.
Yeah, that is one aspect of it. And it's also discriminate between what is temporary and permanent.
Permanent.
The whole idea of discriminating between what is temporary and permanent, like the famous Upanishadic story, have you learnt that knowing which you have learnt everything else?
Yes.
That's what Uddalaka asks Shvetaketu.
Yes.
He said, have you learned that knowledge? So that knowledge is Atmavidya. Hmm. That knowledge is the knowledge of the soul. And that is the Viveka that we'll have to develop.
In fact, I just remember, just today I saw a nice cartoon
mm-hmm.
where a disciple goes to the master.
Okay.
Master, finally I have got it.
Uh-huh.
There is no I and there is no mine. I have got it, Master.
He says, I have got it.
And Master says, who is this piggy?
That's it. Yeah. You know, it's so amazing. When I was reading, in fact, I have not yet completed. I don't want to take credit for that, but I just started reading the Gita Vahini. Mm. What struck me is the first sentence of Gita Vahini. He says, the Bhagavad Gita has to be approached with a sense of reverence and humility.
Yes.
So, you know, these Vahinis which Swami has written, these are all, it's like the distilled essence of Upanishads. It's the distilled essence of all the spiritual knowledge that there is.
Correct.
He has actually brought it down. And, you know, this is often when I was actually introducing Swami's message and teachings to some of my colleagues who had no idea of who Sai Baba is and Swami is. The beautiful thing is, they ask, okay, if he is giving the same message, what is eternal, what is always there, how is it different?
Okay.
See, one thing is, in this day and age, Swami has come in this day and age, but there is this sense, you know, there's a sense of authority in what he gives. Yes. A purity which is not diluted by what the world is
yes.
today. There is an absoluteness, a purity and an authority that goes along with every sentence that he writes. And an absolute relevance.
Yes.
See, that is the unique combination. I mean, if you say, take the first line, he says, if you say, out of all the bygone yugas, in this Kali Yuga, there are easy ways to obtain viveka, discrimination, which indeed is glowing effulgently as much as one desires. Then that is, you know, viveka is an eternal quest.
Yes.
And then he's talking about today's day and age.
Yes.
So how related this eternal quest is in today's day and age? People need not think that in today's day and age, viveka is something which is distant from them.
Correct. I think that is very significant. Yeah. So Bhagwan actually starts on a positive note, saying in today's times, you have in Kali Yuga very easy ways to attain discrimination.
Right.
Actually. You know, we might think this is an age where there is a lot of things which are far from spirituality or
exactly.
spiritual well-being. But here Bhagwan is saying there are ample easy ways.
Right.
I mean, if you go by the all the yugas, we have heard about how it is mentioned that this is the best time to be born, actually.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for us, there is no doubt. Yeah. We have been with Swami. And so, you know, that is the beauty. You see so much of positivity.
Yeah, it starts
right in the first sentence.
Yes.
Where he says, he is not discounting that there are so many avenues to acquire knowledge,
yes.
that there are so many avenues to earn money in a dharmic way. But then the fact is,
yes.
do you know what is the secret to happiness and peace? So he says, in spite of having all this, what is the reason for not having peace and happiness?
Yeah.
And having so many troubles?
Yes.
You know, if you were to ask this question to somebody and you just give them this introduction saying that, okay, if you compare all the ages, Kali Yuga is having the most amount of problems. First of all, you know, in my way of thinking, who has the authority to write about other ages? I mean, how can, like, a human being cannot
Correct.
Make a sentence like this?
Correct.
You cannot form a sentence like this.
Yes.
It can be written only by somebody
yes.
who has an idea of what all the ages are.
Yeah.
In all the yugas.
Yes.
He has written, if you compare to all the yugas, the Kali Yuga has. I mean, who can write that?
Wow. Absolutely.
Isn't that true?
And I think that's why Bhagwan in the first discourse they are saying, Swami said, giving speech is nothing new to me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? Swami says, this is what I have done all the time.
That's exactly what Krishna tells Arjuna also.
Yes.
He says, before you, I have given it to Vivaswan, I have given to Manu, I have given to... Arjuna says, you were there from that time or not? He said, how come this is the first time you are giving this? And Krishna says, not in this form.
Yes.
And this is in fact the same words that Krishna has said.
Yes.
Not in this form. And Swami is giving the same words.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm just thinking, like, if this whole scenario is presented and saying that there are enough avenues to get education, there are enough avenues to earn wealth in this Kali Yuga, then what is missing? Why people are not happy and peaceful all the
yes.
time? So you would, you know, anticipate a big, grand answer. He says, man's behavior
yes.
is the only reason. It's such a simple and, you know, in a sense, in a way, it's such a common sense thing.
Yeah. It's really fantastic. You know, you mentioned that it is common sense, but sometimes, you know, we go through a very complex process to arrive what is so common and what is ultimately, we knew this all the time. I mean, you don't have to do this much of study and this much of research
True.
To get there, you know. This reminds me of this beautiful study,
okay.
which was done in the Harvard Medical School.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's called the Grant Study, Grant Study, and it is part of the study of adult development.
Okay, which year was this done?
So this is actually very interesting because this was a long drawn research.
Okay.
It started way back in 1939.
Oh.
1939. So it's a 75-year longitudinal study of 268 people.
Okay.
So 268 healthy, physically, mentally, you know, perfect people.
Mm-hmm.
And along with this study, there was another study called Glueck study.
Okay.
So the difference between both is, in the Glueck study, they had a second group, the second cohort of 456 individuals.
Mm-hmm.
But these were from disadvantaged, non-delinquent sort of from the rural areas.
Okay.
All from American small towns.
Mm-hmm.
And so this group was picked up in 1940. And the first group was picked up in 1939.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, the study continues even now, even though it's like more than 75 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they were doing is every 2 years they would send them questionnaires and they would do personal interviews. They would talk to their doctors. They would talk to their spouses. They will talk to their children. They'll mm-hmm. talk to their grandchildren. Mm-hmm. And they will talk to their employers and they will take their brain scans and in every possible way.
My goodness.
That they can analyze everything about their career, their physical health, their retirement experience, their mental status after marriage, before marriage, everything. Mm. Okay. So they wanted to identify what are those predictors for happy and healthy aging, you know, happy and healthy living. And as I told you, some people whom the study started in 1939, so those people at that time, they were in high school and now they're already in their 80s.
Right.
And 90s.
Mm.
And actually the study included 4 members who ran for the US Senate. You know, it just happened that way.
Beautiful.
And one of them served in a presidential cabinet and what is most amazing, one became the President of America.
Lovely. Mm.
John Kennedy. President John Kennedy.
Beautiful.
So, in 2012, they started publishing some of the findings, and the Harvard University Press published a book called The Triumphs of Experience.
Okay.
And so more findings started coming now, and currently the project is headed by one Dr. Robert Waldinger from the Massachusetts General Hospital. It's a very beautiful presentation. I saw the video.
Okay.
It's a TED Talk. But what ends the final conclusion of this entire study is 3 words.
Uh-huh.
Happiness is love.
My goodness.
Full stop. So what they have found out is the warmth of relationships. You know, that is what gives a positive impact to everyone's life. So what really contributes to health, happiness and everything positive in life is the warmth of relationships. That is what contributes to life satisfaction. And of course, there are so many offshoots of this research, so many conclusions, very interesting conclusions. They have found out that even financial success depends on the warmth of your relationships.
Oh.
After a certain level, it is not your IQ.
Mm.
It is how good your relationships are.
Mm.
How happy you are in your relationships. So they found out that those who scored highest on warm relationships, they earned an average of $1,41,000 a year more than others. Similarly, they found that the people whose IQ was 110 to 115 and the men with IQ of higher than 150, there was no difference. After a certain level, your IQ was not giving you extra money.
Mm.
What was giving you more money was how good is your relationship with everyone in your family and in society. And of course, for me, the most beautiful finding of this is the warmth of childhood relationship with mother.
Okay.
So that is one of the beautiful conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
They said that is what matters so much.
Mm-hmm.
The men who had warm childhood relationship with their mothers, they earned an average of $85,000 more a year, more a year than men whose mothers were uncaring. That is the financial part.
Mm.
men who had poor childhood relationship with their mothers were much more likely to develop dementia when they grow old. And later, even in their professional lives, all the men whose boyhood relationship with their mothers was good, they were more effective at work.
Amazing.
It's really fantastic. So they say the warmth of childhood relationship with mother counts and affects and influences your life till you are almost 75. So that is, you know, Bhagwan so beautifully just told us, Matru Devo Bhava.
And in such a beautiful sentence he says, it's because of man's behavior.
Yeah.
Behavior. Pravartana, that's the word he uses in Telugu. He says, pravartana, your behavior is the cause for lack of peace and happiness in this Kali Yuga. The main cause is your behavior, man's behavior.
And I remember when we were in school, Bhagwan used to say, if you are a man, you should have manners. If you are a boy, you should have good behavior.
Okay.
If you are a human being, you should have good human values.
How beautiful. So maybe we can go to the next paragraph.
Yeah.
Human birth is the rarest of rare in the creation. In order to redeem such an exalted human life, sacred pravartana or behavior is important. And to acquire such behavior, character is vital. Even after death, what remains is one's swabhava or nature. Therefore, for every being, conduct is the true strength.
Yeah, we stop there.
So beautiful, because he is differentiating now between general behavior and character. You know, you're now further getting into what behavior means.
Yes.
See, good character, he says, is, yes, everybody has behavior, but in order, see, why do we need to have good behavior? That's what it means. He says, human birth is the pinnacle of creation. Like, human birth itself is so rare, and we have heard 100 times, Jantu Nam Narjanma Durlabham.
Yes. In fact, that is something, frankly to tell you, when I was in the school and Bhagwan used to mention this, you know, Jantunam Narajanma Durlabham, and you're so lucky. And I used to feel, Swami, what is the big deal about it, you know? I mean, there are so many billions of people on the planet. So what is really, why should I feel so elated, so thrilled that, you know, I am a human being? Because, I mean, everybody is human being. The king is a human being. The president of the country is a human being. And the guy who is living in the slum also is a human being. Everybody is human being. And what is really, you know, what is it that you have to really get thrilled about it? You know, at that point in time, I used to many times think, you know, in my small limited mind, of course, at that point in time. But later you realize that, I mean, the possibilities of a human being is so fantastic. I think that is what perhaps makes it so special, because this is perhaps the only being that can actually become the pinnacle of creation. Not only the pinnacle of creation, it can actually become the creator. Because that potentiality to become the creator is there only in this. I mean, so if only we realize what we have, I mean, only if you know that this is a diamond, then you will, you know, keep it safe.
Correct.
If you think this is a stone, then you will just play with it as if it's a marble.
The beautiful thing is, he says, in order to live up to the sanctity of human life, sacred behavior is important.
Yeah.
See, what is it that defines a human life? He says, it's not, you know, anything beyond it. He says, the very fact that you say you are human, if you do not have this set of qualities or behavior, you are subhuman.
Yes.
That's what it is.
So there is a difference between human being and being human.
Beautifully said. That's right. That's what Swami is saying.
Yes.
So,
he says acharamanava and akaramanava.
Yes.
So akaramanava is your man in form. Acharamanava is your man in behavior. So he says only when you behave as a good human being, as a human being,
yes,
then you are eligible to be called a human.
Yeah. Wow.
So, and then he says, there's a very important aspect that comes in here. He says, even after death, one's nature, swabhava, remains. See, this is something which is very, many people have diverse opinions about this whole concept of rebirth. Like some of the religions don't believe there is a rebirth, and many of the people, you know. So what happens is, in my limited knowledge, I may be absolutely wrong, but people who have kind of modified the religions to say that there is no rebirth, possibly, you know, with the idea of instilling fear of God,
yes,
rather than love of God. See, what happens is when you say that, oh, if you are bad in this birth, then God will judge you. On the day of judgment, God will judge you. Why should God judge you? God says, you and I are one. I mean, it is your actions that is going to bind you or unbind you. So, if when God says that you and I are one, in the absolute sense, we are one and the same. That's what God is saying. You and I are one in the purest sense. The purest part of you is what I am.
Yes.
But that is clouded by all your dehabhimanam, your mind, your desires. And if you are not able to free yourself from it in one birth, you have to come back again.
Yes. But I think if you see, even in the Bible, it's very clearly it says that as you sow, so shall you reap.
Right.
And I think a lot of religions,
mm-hmm,
and a lot of people do not have answers to many questions.
Correct.
Which only the theory of reincarnation gives.
Correct.
For example, you know, you have an artist.
Mm-hmm.
Like you had, for Bhagwan's 91st birthday, you had Sashank,
right,
the musician, amazing flutist,
right,
who played for Bhagwan's birthday. So Sashank, when he was 3-4 years old,
mm-hmm,
he identified all the 72 Carnatic ragas.
Really?
Melakartha ragas.
My goodness.
At age 4 and at age 6, he was already giving international concerts.
My goodness. Mm. What a gift.
What a gift.
Mm.
So how do you explain this?
Mm.
So you have all these so many unexplained phenomenon,
mm-hmm,
and that you find the answers only through a theory like this. I mean, that is one perspective.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so he says why it is important to look after every action of yours in a day-to-day, like we are leading our life. What is good? What is bad? I mean, when you do an action, can you say that this action is good, this action is bad? What defines good and bad? So he says every action is important. Every action, you know, he says, even after death, what remains is one's nature. Therefore, for every human being, conduct is the true strength. So, and you know, that also means that day-to-day life, what your behavior is. So how do you define whether an action is good? I am eating food. Now whether I am eating an apple. Now eating an apple, is it good or bad? So, you know, that is the kind of viveka that we have to get. If I eat one apple,
yes,
that may be good. If I start eating 100 apples, that may be bad.
Yeah.
And if I am just eating apples and when the whole world is starving of apples and I have a heap of apples in my house, then that is, so everything is contextual.
Yes.
So, you know, you have an obligation to yourself as an individual, to the society, to nature, and ultimately to the Lord. Shvesti, Samasti, Shrishti, Parameshi. So, I think all these parameters that come into play govern what your day-to-day action is.
Yes. And the other thing, I find that sentence very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
For every human being, conduct is the true strength.
Right.
I think if you connect that with the first few lines, you know, Bhagwan says that people think that what will add to my power is wealth. What will add to my prowess is knowledge. So there Bhagwan says this is not what will, that is not what is your true strength.
In fact, you are just saying what Swami is going to say in the next paragraph. Okay, so maybe we should play the next paragraph.
Let's move on. Yeah.
Right.
In this world, many consider knowledge as shakti or power. This is not true. Guna or character is strength. Without character or gunam, jnanam or wisdom cannot be obtained. Thus, one should have a perfect character. Why is it that Buddha, Jesus, Shankaracharya, Vivekananda and such great personalities, sages and great devotees are remembered by people even till this day? It is because of their nature and character. In fact, wealth, knowledge and position, all of these are worthless before character.
It's absolutely so clear.
Yeah.
And he says, money is not everything. He says, knowledge, people think even knowledge is the actual wealth. And he says, character, gunam, manchi gunam in Telugu. Gunam means good qualities and good character is what is very important.
In fact, that just reminds me of one more study which was done recently.
Okay.
This was done by a person by name Nick Marx.
Okay.
He's an author, statistician, and he's a founder of a concept called Happy Planet Index.
Okay.
So basically, he's known for his trailblazing work where he's talking about, we've been traditionally trying to measure a country's progress through national domestic product, which is basically the value of the goods and services that we have produced.
Correct.
But actually what is more important, he says, is gross national happiness. So that's how he has started this Happy Planet Index. But he feels that our well-being should not be at the cost of compromising with the earth's resources.
Okay.
So you should do it in a sustainable manner. So that is sort of...
Vyashti, Samashti, Srishti, Parameshti.
Parameshti, yes. Okay. But what I have... two, three things that he mentioned which are... which sort of appeal to me and in some way connect to what we are talking about is, apparently the United Kingdom's government's Office of Science, they had conducted a program called Foresight.
Okay.
So this involved 400 experts and it included over 100 commissioned reviews of the science of well-being, you know, the state of the science of well-being in the country.
Amazing.
And so they came out with five positive actions.
Okay.
Which will improve the well-being of people's lives. This is the conclusions of the study. So the first thing they said is to connect.
Okay.
So people really need to have good relationships, good social relationships. Second, be active. You have to step outside. You can't be lethargic. You know, you cannot be passive. Third, take notice.
Okay.
Be aware of everything around you. Be mindfulness. You know, you have all these concepts these days of, you know, being mindful as you're eating, you being more conscious of yourself, of your surroundings. Fourth, keep learning.
Okay.
Be inquisitive. Learn a new instrument. You know, all the time, try and keep your mind going with something to keep it active. And the fifth is to give.
Oh. Nice.
They said, though it seems like an anti-economic activity, but what gives happiness to people is when you can make someone else happy. That happiness is much more lasting, enduring and fulfilling than doing something for yourself.
Very true. In fact, it's seen all the time. I mean, between two lovers, for example,
yes,
the moment one person thinks more about the other,
then there is so much of love and harmony.
Absolutely.
And the moment the person starts thinking about themselves,
yes,
then there's discord.
Absolutely.
And you find a lot of problems start. That is the starting point, actually.
Yeah. When you think about yourself, that's when
that's when things start to fall.
That's when the end of joy happens. Bhagwan very beautifully placed with joy.
But that's the case with everything.
Yes.
See, that's the difference between what is temporary and what is lasting. Like, for example, that's what, in a relationship, if you are thinking about yourself, then it's going to last for a long time. I'm just thinking of an example, like Swami used to say, if you are eating an apple, for example, you are eating the apple for your sake, it's not for the apple's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, whatever we do in our life, we are doing it for our sake. If we really have that much love in the true sense for ourselves, then we should do that which is beneficial to our happiness.
Correct.
So if we really love ourselves so much, we should do that which makes us the happiest.
Correct.
And a person who has not compromised on that is divine.
Yeah.
Because for him, he sees himself in everybody. So if he is serving, he is serving himself. If he is giving, he is giving himself. If he is loving, he is loving himself. If he is talking to, he is talking to himself. And when in that state of consciousness, in that awareness, when somebody is leading a daily life, there is absolutely no cause for any worry or no sad moment. There is no anxiety, nothing. Because everything is himself. Somebody is coming up, doing very well in the office, that is myself doing well. Somebody is not doing well, that is myself not doing well. Yes. So, you know, there is equal, there is a sense of empathy towards every living being.
I think that reminds me of a senior of mine.
Mm-hmm.
He was in his 12th class.
Okay.
And you had these interview sessions with Swami, which Bhagwan granted on some occasions. So, and you know, after a few minutes, and Swami would say, any questions? And you actually want to ask questions to mm-hmm. extend the interview. And so this boy very cutely asked, Swami, I have this problem.
Mm-hmm.
During the study hours, I fall asleep.
Okay.
What to do?
Study hours is in the evening.
Yeah, 8 to 9.30.
8 to 9.30 at night, right.
Yeah. And generally after dinner.
Right.
Actually, you know, if you come from a family where after dinner you sleep, you know, generally it is like that in many families.
Right, right.
And after that, if you come to hostel, after the dinner, actually you study.
Right.
You sleep only 2 hours later.
Mm.
So possibly it could be because of that. But so he said, Swami, what do I do? I'm not able to study during study hours. Swami said, study for me.
Wow.
If you study for me, you will not sleep.
My God. What a beautiful.
You know, really, when he was sharing this also, I was thinking what answer Swami could have given. You know, so many answers are coming in my mind. Swami would have probably
given a glass of water, splash it on your face. This is what human beings would do.
This was like, oh my God, and this is an answer to which, you know, even now he's working for one of the most prestigious consulting companies and for the best consulting company in the world now. He works. But this is something which has made him think, you know, he just cannot forget this. But this is now, he's applying that in his life, in his professional life now. You know, as he has a challenge, assignments and very stressful deadlines, he's trying to remember this all the time. Work for me,
study for me, work for me. When Krishna is saying mayeva manadastva may buddhim niveshaya nivasishyasi mayeva, only because of me, live only for me. What is the same thing? Take me as the basis and do every action for me. I mean, that's what there is. Absolutely no difference. The message is the same. So I think maybe we are running out of time, but quickly we could summarize what we did in the first 2 paragraphs, which has just taken us 1 hour to go through.
Yes. And I think it starts on a very beautiful, encouraging note that even though this is Kali Yuga, in fact, this is the time when you have very easy ways.
Right, right.
So Swami says you don't have to feel disheartened because, you know, we are in the Kali Yuga. Be proud you are in the Kali Yuga.
Mm.
Be happy you are in the Kali Yuga, because Kali Yuga is where the Lord is coming down three times and he has made the path very easy for you.
Correct.
You can have that discrimination. But then Bhagwan, of course, then reflects on this current scenario now. Even though you have a lot of education, a lot of information overload,
right,
really, in these days. And you have enough avenues to earn wealth, but there is no happiness. And then you have Bhagwan who gives the diagnosis that there is this deficiency in one's conduct.
Correct.
That is where everything starts. And I think as Bhagwan goes on to give us explain that whole idea of what is the deficiency in conduct, I think Bhagwan, as a prelude, tries to tell us about the importance of human birth, and I think from there on it moves, isn't it?
Right, right. So it finally, you know, it's a very positive approach to life, which kind of tells you that your entire future and your destiny is in your hand now.
Yes.
It's in your hands right now. You have the choice whether you take the red pill or the blue pill, as in the Matrix. You have the choice. But that's the fact.
Yeah.
He says you have it right in front of you. And with what understanding, with what awareness, with what attitude you do every action of yours, I think finally that's what matters.
Absolutely. Fantastic. You know, you mentioned about attitude. And, you know, as we're talking about happiness, someone very beautifully said, this is again the conclusion of a research over many years. They said the best way to be happy is to have the attitude of
happiness,
of gratitude.
Oh, beautiful.
Of gratitude.
Beautiful, yeah.
You know, if you can have that attitude of always being grateful, everything you take as Bhagwan's prasadam.
That's true. Yeah. And another amendment to that attitude is, if you decide nothing in the world can make me unhappy, then you're going to be happy all the time. That's it. You just decide.
Yeah.
Nothing in this world can make me unhappy.
Yes.
Because I am happy.
Yes.
I am always happy. Yes. That's it. Full stop.
Then you are in union with God.
Exactly. Swami says happiness is union with God.
Wonderful. Okay, I think we've just about started Prema Vahini, and I'm sure it's going to be an exciting journey swimming in Bhagwan's Prema. And I think as Professor Kasturi says, when Bhagwan started Sanatan Saharthi, it had that fragrance of the Bhagavad Gita.
Correct.
You know, and Bhagwan now, the same Partha Saharthi is coming now as Sanatan Saharthi, as guiding our lives, directing our lives. And I think it cannot get more easier than this when the avatar himself has written down the diagnosis and the solution and the way to go about it with all practical tips and tricks. So I think let's make this effort and let's pray to Bhagwan that he gives us that wisdom to not only understand but also be determined to put into practice our little understandings. Thank you so much, Brother Sai Prakash. And so let's offer our salutations to Bhagwan and pray that this satsang of the Vahini continues to uplift us and to everyone.
Thank you.
Sai Ram. So dear listeners, that brings us to the end of the day-long Thursday Live. If you have any queries or comments, as always, you can write to listener@radiosai.org. I am Team Radio Sai's Bishu, and on behalf of all of us, I place our humble salutations at Bhagwan's lotus feet. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.
You were listening to an episode of our program, Vahini Satsang. This episode was first aired on the 15th of December, 2016, as part of Thursday Live from Prashantinilayam on Asia Stream of Radio Sai Global Harmony. This program was hosted by Team Radio Sai's Bishu. Thank you and Sai Ram.